Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
All right, welcome to another edition of Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm your host, David Smith. You can email us, as always, at feedback@ifiaction.org or follow us on Twitter at IL Family Action. Lori Higgins is back with us, a guest today. She is the cultural affairs writer for our sister organization, Illinois Family Institute. You can find her writing and articles at illinoisfamily.org. Over the years, Lori has written on a whole host of different topics that are in the culture, or regarding culture, world, Christian worldview. And she does an amazing job writing thought-provoking and compelling articles that help us think through these issues. And you can find her articles, again, at illinoisfamily.org. And I encourage you to subscribe to the email list so you never miss an article. Thank you, Lori, for taking time to record this podcast with me today. I think it's important that we continue talking about the issues, especially those issues that are affecting public schools, government schools, as far as the trans ideology and how it is starting in our schools, but is affecting multiple areas in our culture, and it's going to be forced on us, even in workplaces. So, one of the things that we didn't talk about last time was what are the requirements according to the trans community to be a transgender person?
Actually, there's no requirements. They don't believe that you need to have, and I'll tell you why this is important, because sometimes I hear conservatives say, well, particularly, well, I've heard this from women, well, if the man has had surgery, then it's okay if he's in the restroom, because all they're focusing on is assault, which is...
Yeah, there's some conservatives who actually buy into that line as well.
Right.
That's, as long as they have the surgery, well, that's fine. They can serve in the military, for example.
Right, exactly. And of course, having being castrated doesn't turn a man into a woman. Having a double mastectomy doesn't turn a woman into a man. So either sex matters, our biological sex matters, or it doesn't. If it doesn't matter, then there is no reason for ever having had separate restrooms for men and women. If physical, biological sex doesn't matter, why have we ever had these private spaces?
That's right.
So, but what they say is they don't need to have surgery. They don't need to take cross-sex hormones. I want to make it clear, I don't like either of those things. I'm not advocating that. I just want people to know what the trans community says. They don't need surgery. They don't need cross-sex hormones. They don't need to cross-dress. They don't even need to experience gender dysphoria, because for people to understand, gender dysphoria is the distress people feel over a perceived mismatch between their sex and their gender identity, what they feel like, their subjective internal sense of being male or female. They don't need any of those things. All they need is their claim that they are male or female. And in fact, they don't need a diagnosis from a doctor. When Barack Obama issued all of his edicts to, you know, housing and urban development and through the Department of Education, saying that whether it was Title IX of the Education Amendments or Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, that the word sex actually included gender identity, which it didn't, and it was very clear in the clarifications of those that it didn't mean that. At that time, he said, for example, to schools, kids should be using restrooms and locker rooms according to their gender identity based on nothing than their own word. Not parental permission, not doctor's diagnoses, just what they themselves say. So you, and by the way, some of them will have, particularly men who identify as women, will have just what they call top surgery. So they will have breast implants, but not bottom surgery. So I want people to imagine they're in their health club locker room.
I want to encourage people not to imagine.
Yes. But since health clubs, many health clubs allow members to join at age 13 or 14, so they can have teenagers in there.
Oh, sure. No, yeah, absolutely.
And many health clubs, maybe all of them, have childcare. So sure. There are little children. So you could have a person who's objectively male, sure. who has his male anatomy intact and has breast implants, walking naked through your locker room.
And that's we're not talking about man boobs.
Yes, exactly. Right. Much more substantial than that.
Oh, my goodness. So
and then, okay,
go ahead. Go ahead. No, finish your thought, please.
Well, I was just, it sort of brings us to other cultural implications that no one thinks about. For example, now in every state, they can get, those who identify as the opposite sex can get new birth certificates. I think it's maybe there's 6 states that you can't. The vast majority, and they've been able to do that in Illinois for 50 years. We've just made it even easier.
In Illinois, if you've had a transgender surgery, you could change your birth certificate sex designation. Now, thanks to some of our Illinois lawmakers and our governor, Governor Bruce Rauner, who signed this legislation into law as of January 2018, you can change your birth certificate even if you haven't had surgery, correct?
Right. You haven't had surgery, and all you need, before you had to have an affidavit from a doctor confirming that you've had the surgery. Now, you don't need to have the surgery, and you don't even need, you just have to have a document signed by any mental health counselor saying that you've been treated for gender dysphoria. Right. And treatment can be a session or two with a counselor. So right. It's very, very easy. So, and you can get your driver's license changed. So I want people to think about, what does that do to public decency laws? Right. So putting it together, what is required, you don't, in the world of the trans community, you don't need to have surgery, you don't need to take cross-sex hormones. So what do we say if in a public park where people are playing, men are playing topless frisbee, as they might do on a summer day or a beach, sure. and now you have a woman who identifies as a man, she now has her new birth certificate, her new driver's license, and she decides she's to be treated like a man, so she will go on the beach and play topless frisbee, and she hasn't had top surgery.
That's right.
So this is where we're going in the culture.
There's another aspect to this too. You know, the American Family Association has had a boycott. They've called for a boycott of Target because they have decided to make their bathrooms co-ed. Well, now here in Illinois, starting in January 2018, you're going to have transgender people who have changed their birth certificates. They have a legal document that says it's okay for me to be in that other bathroom no matter where I am, Target or not Target.
Oh, and speaking of bathrooms and Deerfield High School, we mentioned that in the earlier podcast that I worked at Deerfield High School. Well, Deerfield High School now has 2 co-ed restrooms, multiple stall co-ed restrooms. And it's not just for students who have gone to the school administration, have special dispensation because they're gender dysphoric. It's any student, and it's not a single stall where you go in and click the thing. It's got 2 stalls, and any boys and girls can be in there at the same time.
Well, can you talk a little bit about the emotional toll this is taking on especially kids in elementary school who, one day Johnny's there as a boy, the next day he is there as Juanita. What kind of emotional toll is this taking? You had children in sports at Deerfield High School, and they had to access the locker rooms and change into swimming suits and such. What kind of emotional toll is this stress is this creating for those students who don't want to deal with this?
Right. Oh, this is a huge issue. The California school that I mentioned in our earlier podcast, the school didn't even notify any of the parents that they were going to have this transgender reveal presentation where a little boy, the teacher read those 2 picture books about transgenderism. And then after that, a little boy who had actually is a boy, but now identifies as a girl, popped out of a restroom or something, now dressed in girl's clothes. Well, the parents weren't apprised of this ahead of time. And how they found out was one mother, her 7-year-old daughter, I think it was 7 years old, 6 or 7, was in the bath, was getting out of the bath, and when she saw herself reflected in the chrome, her hair was all slicked back with water, she started crying and asked her mother if she was going to turn into a boy.
Wow.
And so, and that's how the mother found out about this issue. By the way, many parents have left the school as a result of their policy. So the young children are too young to understand, little children are too young to understand
right.
gender dysphoria.
Right.
In addition,
we're talking about kids who also believe in the tooth fairy, right?
So right, exactly.
Right.
In addition, schools are not presenting all possible understandings of the experience of gender dysphoria and all possible ways that people, even experts, think it should be treated. They're promoting a leftist understanding of the nature of gender dysphoria and a leftist understanding of how it should be treated. So that's profoundly unjust. It's not ethical for them to be doing that in schools.
Right. Well, and then speed up to even high school level, you know, you got 14, 15, 16 year old girls having to share locker room with boys who are identifying as girls. I mean, that's not, I can only imagine what my teenage daughters would be thinking.
And the reason I said this is such a huge issue because there's so many dimensions of this. So of course you've got the natural self-consciousness boys and girls feel with developing bodies.
Right.
Often it attends lots of insecurity. They feel, I don't look the way that I want to look. I don't look like the image of, you know, what you see out in the culture of what a masculine boy should look like or a feminine girl should look like. So you've got all those insecurities. Their bodies are changing. They develop at different rates. You have some boys who graduate from eighth grade looking like they're 17 and some that graduate from eighth grade looking like they're 10.
Right.
then you have children, particularly girls, but boys too, who have been sexually molested as children, and perhaps no one knows. And I know personally, I know a girl, she's deeply involved in Washington State with trying to prevent this co-ed restroom and locker room. And I'm not revealing anything, she talks about this. She was sexually molested by her father from age 1 to 10.
Holy cow.
Not just sexual, very serious sexual molestation. In addition, he would watch her take a shower all the way through college, and she was a collegiate athlete. She always showered in her underwear because she did not want to be naked in front of anyone. So you have kids, and often you don't know those stories. We know how many years it takes for kids who are molested to come forward if they ever do. And now you're saying you're going to be changing in an area with opposite sex persons.
All right, so we're going to have to wrap up this first segment real quick, but I have to ask, Lori, just based on what you're saying, so do these normal students, normal, in other words, they're not suffering from gender identity disorder, but that, do they have any standing to claim that they feel unsafe? Do they have any standing? And will the school board or school administration give them any consideration, or do they actually fall secondary or third, you know, down the line to the gender dysphoric student?
Well, the answer to the question is yes and yes. Yes, they do have recourse, and their recourse is they can go to the administration and say, I'm not comfortable, and then they get to go to a private area and change. So that's what the schools are doing now. So people need to understand what that means. Now the people who, it's girls who don't want to change in the presence of objectively male persons,
yes,
who now have to go to a separate area to change. The gender dysphoric, confused kid, his interests or desires supersede those of girls.
Amazing. All right. Well, when we come back, I want to talk to you, Lori, about an article that you just penned titled Things You Don't Hear About Gender Dysphoria. So please join us when we return.
For 25 years, the Illinois Family Institute has been your voice in the legislature and in the public square. And with your support, IFI will continue to speak for you as we carry out the mission to protect life, family values, and religious liberty in Illinois. It's easy to give to IFI, and donations are tax deductible. Visit IllinoisFamily.org for more information or call 708-781-9328. That's 708-781-9328. The website once again is IllinoisFamily.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. We are here with Lori Higgins, the cultural affairs writer for Illinois Family Institute, and we're talking about transgender issues and gender dysphoria. And so, Lori, back on December 8th, you wrote an article. It was published at IllinoisFamily.org titled Things You Don't Hear About Gender Dysphoria. And it's one of your longer articles, but you've got so much information in here. We've got to go through it a little bit today to talk about the various things in here. Could you give us an overview before I jump into some of the questions? What compelled you to write this article?
Well, I mean, lots of things compelled me. One of which was we're seeing schools, if not changing their policy, changing their practices on restrooms and locker rooms. And I say not changing their policy because they're not proposing it at school board meetings and opening it up to the public for comments and changing it. They're just quietly allowing those students who identify as the opposite sex to use restrooms and locker rooms. They're quietly sending out emails compelling teachers to use opposite sex pronouns. And I know there are many things that school board members and administrators don't know about gender dysphoria, and that these are important things to know. And here's the reason why. I'm convinced that 10, 20, 30 years ago, we're gonna look back on this as one of the great hoaxes or errors in the medical community.
Boy, I hope you're right.
Like, the false memory syndrome and lobotomies.
Yes.
And I wanna say to administrators, are you gonna take responsibility for participating in, accommodating, facilitating this grievous error that is harming children? And so I wanted to write this material so parents, community members would have it in one place and they could take it to their schools as they either promote co-ed restrooms or are allowing them.
Well, I hope you're right, but one of the points you bring out in this article is that there's an explosion in the number of children and teens identifying as transgender. Why do you think that is?
Well, there are a number of reasons. One is what is called social contagion, and many people, and that's just being, sort of picking up ideas and being influenced by your culture.
Oh, sure.
And there's actually a phenomenon, it's mostly among teenage girls, called rapid onset gender dysphoria. That's what people have coined it. And it's girls who have never experienced gender dysphoria or never expressed that they did, because the left is saying, oh, they probably really did, but just didn't express it. But their families are saying there was never any indication that they had experienced any kind of dysphoria. And suddenly in their teenage years, suddenly they will say that they are transgender. Mm. And they'll say that some of them have multiple friends who identify as transgender. And that's just bizarre. And so people are, and there's, I provide links to two websites that I highly encourage people to visit and read. They were both started by parents, one in the UK and one in the United States here. And those are parents telling their stories about their children suddenly identifying at 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. They are going to counselors after one or two visits, they're being put on cross-sex hormones. And so that is one of the very troubling, the social contagion thing. And then their parents are being terrified if they have little children who say, I wish I were a boy, I wish I were a girl. Parents are so terrified that their child will commit suicide if they don't affirm this. And actually, there's the number of kids who commit suicide, not who experience suicidal ideation, but who commit suicide, is very small. And in addition, some of the research that's used has been grossly misinterpreted. And I have links to all of this. And so I sympathize with parents being terrified about this. What they don't hear very often is that unless kids, if kids don't socially transition, that means cross dress, you know, adopt opposite sex haircuts, you know, you change their name, use opposite sex pronouns, unless they do that and go on puberty blockers, upwards of 80% of those kids will come to accept their sex. Many of them will identify as homosexual, but they will accept their sex. And I think as much as we don't want our children to experience same-sex attraction or to adopt that identity, that happens sometimes.
Right.
And we don't, on top of that, want them mutilating their bodies.
Gosh, no. Well, you use the word desist. Is it fair to say grow out of it? I mean,
yeah, that is, yes. Desisting is where, exactly, where they come to sort of grow out of it and they accept their biological sex. Maybe they still experience same-sex attraction, but they accept their biological sex and they no longer feel as if they are the opposite sex or wish they were the opposite sex. And by the way, there's a lot of, well, I go into that in this article, there's a lot of proposed or causes for the experience of gender dysphoria. And the ones that I list in there are ones that people who experience it are identifying as the causes. Family trauma, family dysfunction, sexual abuse. There's all sorts of reasons that account for the experience of gender dysphoria, and those things should be dealt with.
Well, desistance is one thing that you were just talking about, but there's also something called detransitioning. So some 80%, as you said, of some of these kids will grow out of it, but there's others who do make the change, maybe not the drastic changes, but who come back and say, well, no, I'm really who I was born as. God created me.
Yeah. Well, they might not use that language.
No, I know that. Yes.
Right.
But some people, so like Walter.
Oh, yeah.
Walter Heyer. Yep.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There are some people, but there are many more who detransition. And yes,
explain
some of those.
What that is. What detransitioning
is, people who have been identifying as the opposite sex, usually for some years. It might be a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, up to many, many years. And then they realize that they accept that they are their real sex, their objective biological sex, and they regret taking the opposite sex hormones. And there's quite a number of them who have had the surgery too. In fact, I linked to an article by a surgeon who does this and has had multiple people, I think it was like a dozen in 1 year, come to him and want him to reverse the surgery, which is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And actually, and he has no opposition. This is, in fact, most of the articles that I link to are from people who are on the political left. These aren't just from conservatives. And that article was particularly interesting because another doctor that he's friends with, a colleague, wanted to do some research into detransitioning and, you know, I don't know if it was like how many people want to seek to detransition or what is the best protocol for dealing with that issue. And they've been stymied in their efforts to do it by political pressure from the trans community.
Now, one of the tools that they use, the medical people use to help transgender confused, I don't know, those who I self-identify, let me put it that way, puberty blockers. I want to talk about that a little bit. You point out here that they carry serious known health risks, and we don't know what the long-term effects are of their usage. This should be a big concern to parents as well as those who are considering using these chemicals.
Right. Well, that's very troubling because these, obviously, they're puberty blockers, so they're given to kids around age 10, very, very young. And the puberty blockers do exactly what they're called. They block puberty. They don't develop secondary sex characteristics. And now what the left will say is these are reversible. If they stop the puberty blockers, then puberty will ensue. Of course, if you block puberty and kids' bodies don't develop, and puberty affects your emotions, you know,
yeah,
when you
absolutely
have that release of hormones, it affects everything. And it also changes your social experiences if you don't go through puberty. So
yeah.
That's one problem.
As a layperson, I can't imagine it doesn't stunt you in some way.
Right.
It doesn't have a negative effect if you block the progression the way God has made it, or natural if you're not a God-believing, Bible-believing Christian, you know.
Right. Right. It's profoundly unnatural. And it doesn't affect just the bodies that they say the effects are reversible. So you can go back and, you know, and go through puberty then. But you've missed that experience, the social experiences that attend that. So your middle school experiences have been completely transformed. But what they have found, well, the one of the main puberty blockers they use is called Lupron, which has been around for years.
You named that in the article. Yep.
Right. And so that it has been, there's a lot of complaints about the side effects of Lupron, but Kaiser Health News, I think it was last February, came out. It was a really interesting article, interesting and very sad, because they're finding Lupron is given not just to kids who identify as trans, but it's given for other purposes, like when they have what is premature puberty. So very, very young girls, for example, will start developing, maybe even have periods at very young ages. I mean, like six. It's just, right. It's a, obviously it's an endocrine disorder. And the other reason, so they give it to them to stave off this early puberty. And then they also give these puberty blockers to kids who are destined to be very, very short, like maybe not even reach 5 feet tall. So one, if you delay puberty, they grow taller. They'll be maybe a few inches taller. So, but what they're finding in these kids is things like osteopenia, which is bone, there are bone density issues. So osteopenia sure. is bone thinning. They're finding osteoporosis in young women who were on this because of the menstrual issue. And so they have bone loss. They're finding degenerative disc disease. One girl, they're having problems with their jaws because of bone density issues, and fibromyalgia, and some emotional consequences. What was interesting about the Kaiser News article was it mentioned all the, and it said the FDA is now mounting a review because they've had, the complaints are so serious and there are so many of them. And what was interesting about the article though was they mentioned the reasons this is given to kids, the growth and the premature puberty, but they never mentioned the whole trans issue, puberty blockers for kids who identify as trans. I tried to contact the author to ask why that wasn't mentioned, but no one ever gets back to me. So,
well, now what's the difference between puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones? One of the points you have here is that these hormones can leave people permanently sterile.
Yes. Okay. So kids will go on puberty blockers from say 10 to, you know, maybe around age 14, and then they switch to cross-sex hormones. So girls will be start taking testosterone, boys will start taking estrogen. What's interesting is they're much more likely, if they've been on puberty blockers, they're much more likely, significantly more likely to go on to cross-sex hormones than gender dysphoric children who don't go on puberty blockers. So if you give your kids a real chance to desist, don't put them on puberty blockers. Yeah. But about the cross-sex hormones, and you can read my article about all the side effects. The sterility is, they'll say in most cases, I've heard it's permanent, but that's not reversible. Sterility. So we're asking now 14, 15, 16 year olds to make a decision about a life decision. Sterility.
Yeah.
At that age, when we know, which I talk about in the article, the brain research shows that the part of the brain that is able to think rationally, the prefrontal cortex, and to control impulsivity and to think about long-term consequences, that is not fully developed until about age 25. Sometimes it's later even.
Sure.
And boys. And so we're asking, and by the way, girls can get double mastectomies at age 15, as young as age 15. So we're expecting these kids to make decisions like that at an age that their brain isn't capable of making decisions like that.
No, I wouldn't have been able to make those kind of decisions. Those are, I mean, serious decisions that people make.
Many years ago, we had friends who never wanted to have children. They're 68 now, so that's how many years ago. They're in their 20s. At that point, and so he wanted to have a vasectomy. At that point, doctors said they wouldn't do a vasectomy until he was age 30, even though neither of them wanted to have children. But a urologist wouldn't do a vasectomy until he was age 30. And can I mention two other things about the permanence? The other thing that is permanent are voice changes. So if people go online, go to YouTube, Google detransitioning and watch some of those videos, and particularly girls who've detransitioned, and they'll talk about, then you listen to their voices and they will have to go the rest of their lives with their voices like that.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, I want to ask you to wrap this up. We've got to close out this podcast, but what advice would you give to pastors, parents, and grandparents about this issue?
Well, it depends on who you're talking about. If these are loved ones who have children who are experiencing gender dysphoria, I would say definitely do not put them on puberty blockers, and definitely do not facilitate any of the social transitioning, even as you love them deeply.
I guess what I'm asking is, on the educational front, how do you talk to gay pastors? Should they be talking about this to their congregation? Parents, should they be talking about this to their kids? Grandparents, should they be talking to their kids and grandkids? You know, in my view, in my family, I want to sit down and hash this out. I want my children to be aware of what's going on in the culture and how to think correctly about it. And if they have questions I can't answer, well, then let's go. Let's go try to find out those questions. But it seems to me is we're not talking about this, and we need them.
No, first of all, churches have to take this up. They have to prepare their flocks to understand the secular arguments that are normalizing this and help equip them. Parents, you need to go to your schools and, I think the main question you had was about your own children. Yeah, you have to talk to them.
It's all of the above. Pastors and then parents, and grandparents. Pastors. Churches need to do this.
Pastors need to do it. They need to be equipped. I would argue, I'm making a speculating here, that most pastors wouldn't be able to do what I do on this issue. And actually, everybody should be able to understand this, because it's too prevalent and it's too important. So you need to, if your church is not providing some sort of teaching context, like the big church I visited, then people should be asking their pastors to do that.
And you're available, right, Lori? You want to go to churches and teach on this and talk to people. I know you roll your eyes. I know you. Public speaking isn't your favorite thing to do, but you recognize the need, right?
Right, I do. I recognize the need to do it. I just learned doing it at my church in January or February.
Right.
So yes, and you need to ask that of your churches to provide that. Christians have to become willing to be persecuted. You have to talk about this issue to other people, including maybe people sometime who experience gender dysphoria. If you love people, you will talk to them about that.
Amen.
Yes, you need to talk to your kids. I want to say this. I don't think we should be talking to our young kids about this. I think before, I don't know, I would say not before 10.
Right.
You may have to, because they see something out in the world or something happens at school. You may have to, but if they're hearing about it at school, you need to pull them out, because, and I say also, you need to contact your school at the beginning of every school year, contact every teacher and your administrators and say, under no circumstances is my child to be exposed, I'm talking about elementary school, to any resources, activities, anything that pertains to gender dysphoria or homosexuality. And if they won't agree to that, then they're telling you that they're going to be indoctrinating.
That's right. Well, in many schools, way too many schools are doing just that. You can find Lori's writings at IllinoisFamily.org, where, by the way, she also records her articles as podcasts. This is a great option for busy people who like to listen to podcasts while commuting, exercising, walking the dog, or doing some other mundane chores. She is the cultural affairs writer for Illinois Family Institute. Thank you, Lori, for joining us today. I'm Dave Smith, and you've been listening to another edition of Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll be back next week with more.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.